When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. If you want to hit us on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. That's how you get in touch with us. Power ranking of the power rankings. Very interested to see what the experts think of the Houston Texans. They have risen as high as the third or fourth best team in the league, according to these four outlets that we subscribe to here. And
we were skeptical of those at the time because that was when we were still in the midst of, as the Texans jumped out to their healthy record, they were playing like a 500 football team in a lot of ways. We felt like the people that were putting them third or fourth in the league just really weren't watching the Texans.
No. Games. And all you had to do is look at their point differential and say like, oh yeah, you know, like they're 6-4 with a negative point differential right now.
Dude, this is crazy. Jeremy Branham had tweeted this out yesterday, and they're -2 in point differential on the season right now.
Yep.
They're right there. They're a 500 football team in a lot of regards. They are +57 in the first half of games.
Yeah.
-59 in the second half.
I mean,
it's stark as it could be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. If they just played to draws in the second half of games, they'd have a really, really healthy scoring margin right now. But they completely fall apart in the second half.
+57. I mean, if you just take that and double it, right? If they played the same, if they took the way they played in the first half of games and played that way entire games, they're the Detroit Lions. You know, the Detroit Lions' point differential, if I'm not mistaken, is +113. I think it was +110 going into the game this weekend.
So if you play that same way that you do at +57 in the first half,
you're the Lions.
You send 114 and
you're the Lions. Yeah, so it matters. You know, that's why the whole a win is a win thing is true. Like nobody, you know, unless you get down to the sixth or seventh tiebreaker, your net scoring shouldn't come back to bite you. It is a tiebreaker eventually. Like if you're tied, eventually it does get down to your point differential in certain games, But yeah, man, like it is a forecast. It is a harbinger for what type of team you are.
Yeah, it's really, if you look at like where are the Texans right now? They're at -2. So the Falcons are a +2 differential. The Seahawks are a -11 differential. Those are who you're sandwiched in between.
Well, let's find out.
Let's
find out. Let's look at these power rankings, and we'll start. We power rank these power rankings. The ones we go to are The Athletic, ESPN, CBS, and SI.com. Those four. Fourth on the power ranking of the power rankings is CBSSports.com. They've got the Texans at 14th in the league right now. This is as low as they've been all year on any of these power rankings. 14th, still in the upper half, still on the fringe of the playoffs here. And it says this, Pete Prisco, at 6-4, they have to be thankful the division isn't good. They will win it, but they have to get back on track and start winning some games. All true, I would say.
All true. And likewise, a lot of the things you could say about the Falcons or any team that's in the NFC South perennially, depending on what the Bucs actually are as a football team. At the very least, in the NFC South now, you've got the Bucs that are just a hard team to figure, at least. The AFC South, it's the Texans and nobody else right now.
That's right.
And it's not because the Texans are such a shining example.
It's a bad division.
That's how bad the AFC South is.
A bad division with bad quarterbacks. And to your point, Seth, with the point you just made about the point differential they have with the Falcons and the Seahawks kind of in that neighborhood, whereas earlier in the year in rankings like this, and we'll get to the other three in a second, they were living next door to teams like the Ravens and the Bills.
Yeah.
Chiefs, 49ers, they were up among teams like that, Packers, teams like that. They are sandwiched in between. These are the two teams on either side of the Texans in this power ranking. Cardinals 12, Falcons 13, Texans 14, Broncos 15.
Oh, Sean Payton, don't do this to me.
Bengals 16, and I'll throw the Seahawks in there just because you mentioned them. They're 17. So you're living in an okay neighborhood. It's an okay neighborhood, you know, like
right.
It's, you know, not everybody's got a swimming pool and you know, there's a lot of a lot more cars parked on the street instead of in their driveways and things like that. You know, it's houses are smaller. Not a horrible neighborhood, but it ain't like you're living where the Steelers are now. The Steelers used to be living in this neighborhood earlier. The Steelers are living, they're living in River Oaks now, man. They got the Ravens and the Bills and the Lions right next to them here in the rankings. So
I think the Broncos, so the difference between, say, the Texans and the Broncos right now is that the Broncos have their upcoming stretch. Who are they now? Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Bengals. The Bengals are 4-6, and they're right below the Broncos in this power ranking. Yeah. The Bengals play, I think it's the Chargers and the Steelers coming up, mm-hmm. whereas the Texans have the Cowboys and the Titans.
Yeah.
So, all right, if you are better than the mediocre team that you look like in a lot of ways, if you get Nico Collins, if you get Will Anderson back, if the Texans are genuinely better than a middling NFL team, then you better do your work versus these two fraud teams that you're about to face.
Yeah.
Whereas the Bengals are 4-6, probably the best 4-6 team that there is out there. They've got a really tough test coming up in the next couple
weeks. Texans are the team that they think they can be, and they quite honestly, like I think they can be. I don't know. I think the ceiling is still fairly high for this team if they get some things fixed and get some guys back. You should be a top 10 team in these rankings by Thanksgiving. You win your next two games. You should beat the Cowboys and the Titans. No question to me. All right, next one, number three. Number four was CBSSports.com. Number three, ESPN.com. They have the Texans, Seth, 13th. And their category this week is non-QB MVP.
Ooh.
They're non-QB. This is DJ Bieniemy writes this.
Okay, let me make a guess.
Yeah.
So, in my mind, there would be three candidates.
Mm-hmm.
There would be Will Anderson, Nico Collins, but he's missed four games, and Joe Mixon. So, I'm going to go with and Will Anderson, it's offset a little bit when it comes to, like, MVP for the team because he and Danielle Hunter is such a good combo, 1-2 punch.
Yep.
So I'm going to guess it's Joe Mixon.
It's Joe Mixon. Good job.
There you go. Me and DJ Bieniemy.
Yeah, look
on the same wavelength.
Simpatico. He says this. Mixon has helped the Texans' offense through its passing attack struggles without Diggs and Nico Collins. Mixon is averaging 93.6 rushing yards. I hate that about that last game. It put him under 100 yards per game now. Still third most in the NFL, helping to keep the offense in decent shape. Sixth in rushing touchdowns, despite playing only seven games, he's sixth in rushing touchdowns. Houston should get Nico back, who led the league in receiving before his injury. Mixon's production should only get better once Collins returns. I would pick Nico as the non-QB MVP, and I would point to how well he played in the five games that he played in, leading the league. He was leading the league in receiving yards still, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 2 weeks after he was out. Week seven, he had been out for most of the Bills game and all of the Patriots game and was still leading the league in receiving yards. I would also point to the fact that the offense has been a mess since Nico was gone. It's almost like one of those MVP votes that you feel how valuable the guy is in not being it. Like in 2011, when Peyton Manning went out with a neck injury and all of a sudden the Colts went to crap, people are like, man, I'd vote for Peyton Manning for MVP right now. look how valuable he is to the Colts. They stink. They're going to be picking first in the draft.
So I want to say he was flirting with the top 10 even going into last week, with obviously no way to do anything about it. He's the 18th leading receiver in the NFL right now after missing almost half the games. Yeah. So if he wanted to get back up into the top 10, understanding that these other receivers above him or most of them are going to play this week right now, he's got 567 yards right now. CeeDee Lamb has 681 yards. And he's seventh in the league in receiving.
Okay.
If Nico went off and had like a 200-yard game against the Cowboys, which is very conceivable, that's not a pie-in-the-sky notion or something, he could loft himself back up into the top seven or eight pretty quickly.
Yes.
And then it'd be fun.
Yep, would be fun. All right, second power ranking.
If he does it all in the first quarter and then the offense doesn't do anything for the rest of the game, it's not going to feel any
better. That'd be on brand, actually.
Right now.
That's the chalk. Power ranking of the power ranking. So CBS fourth, ESPN third, second place, SI.com, who also has the Texans at 13th on their board. And they say this, it's cliche to say we're about to learn a lot about Houston as a team, but here we have a juxtaposition.
Ooh,
big word. Detroit has already been through the suck. DeMeco Ryan's coached up a first-year team into a first-round playoff victory, but now their proverbial suck has arrived. Since October 20th, C.J. Stroud hasn't posted a QB rating over 100. Wow. I got to stop for a second. It's been
since when?
October, since the Green Bay game.
Okay.
He has a 2-to-2 touchdown to interception ratio since then, and he's been sacked 18 times since then. Not even close to all of this is on his plate, but the salad days for the Texans are over.
The salad days are over. People amongst the fan base are starting to point their eyes, their scope at DeMeco Ryans himself. DeMeco's starting to get more criticism than they ever have. I'm glad they brought up the Detroit Lions because, yeah, the Lions are a year or two ahead of the Texans in their rebuild or redevelopment or resurgence, whatever you want to call it. But it was less than a year ago that Dan Campbell had people parked outside of his house protesting him while his daughter was at home alone, to the point where Dan Campbell had to move this offseason because he doesn't like people knowing where he lives. So it's like welcome to the club, DeMeco. It's even if you guys get the ship righted and start to look more like you would, this is the life of an NFL coach in 2024.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, making the playoffs last year, that amps up expectations. I think all the time about that play in the Indianapolis game at the end of the year, that fourth down play that Tyler Goodson dropped, and think to myself, if he catches that, there's a good chance Indianapolis goes on to win that game. And then it's Indy in the playoffs, not the Texans. Right. The Texans are 9-8. And who knows if now a lot of the world could change then. Like, who knows if Danielle Hunter even wants to come here, because then there's no Cleveland game in the playoffs for him to go to and go, wow, this could be fun. You know, does Diggs want to come here? Do they make the move? There's all these things. But the fact of the matter is, making the playoffs, winning a playoff game, and then making all these moves set the expectations up here.
Right. You know? There was times during the offseason where I thought, man, in the grand scheme of things, it might have been a lot better if the Texans hadn't won that game against Indianapolis, just because it did. It put everything, and then they had the game that they did versus the Browns, and that's where the enthusiasm, not just in Houston but elsewhere, really picked up for them, to the point where, I mean, people almost forgot about the fact that they completely just didn't show up versus the Ravens in the playoffs. Yeah. You know, in terms of tempering expectations or having a realistic view of where the Texans were, maybe you got to remind yourself, yeah, that they could have easily lost to Gardner Minshew.
Yes.
And meanwhile, for the die had already been cast for the Colts. The Colts would probably be better off this year with Gardner Minshew as their quarterback.
No doubt.
But there was no way they were going to do that, obviously, with a young Anthony Richardson on the roster.
Nope. And now they've got the version of Joe Flacco that was playing in that playoff game for Cleveland last year.
That part of it's fun.
That is fun. All right, last one. Number one, power ranking of the power rankings, The Athletic. Who also has the Texans 13th? Why am I picking The Athletic? Their font is... I like their font. It's easy to read on my eyes.
Yeah. Roman, like the publication.
Baby. I do.
The tiebreaker was the value of the publication.
I do.
To
I pay a lot for it, man. We all do. But it's worth it. I love The Athletic.
And even though the New York Times has taken, you know, multiple shots to the chin over the last 10 years or so, self-inflicted, and they're not what they used to be. There's a snobby part of you that likes that they're owned by the New York Times because you feel like you're an intellectual.
Probably. Realized that, but then you pointed out to me.
You
that's
do. You're
true.
Like, yeah, you look down on people that don't read the Athletic or the New York Times.
That's true. Okay, let me read the this is the blurb they have about the Texans in here. The category they have in the Athletic for like the topic this week: QB confidence rating.
Okay.
All right, so I don't know if you're looking at this. What do you think, and this is on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think the QB confidence rating is from The Athletic on CJ Stroud?
How is it rated? Like, what's the scale?
1 to 10, I'm pretty sure.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Is it short-term confidence or long-term confidence?
QB confidence rating.
Short term, I'm at a 4. Okay. Long term, I'm at a 9. So
okay.
I'll split the difference and I'll say that they said, but 6 is too low. 7, 8. But now the Athletic still had CJ as like their second ranked quarterback.
Give me a number, man.
Yeah, you sprung this on me, boss. 8.
It's seven. I thought you were right. You were right on track to pick seven. It's They have seven. What's your confidence?
You just, I thought you wanted it to be like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where they encourage the contestants to kind of think out loud.
Yeah.
It builds suspense.
We're up again. Yeah, no, right. they don't have a hard out though. Like we not a hard out, but whatever. Seven is what
I've
they
got
have.
A hard out for Regis.
Even Reggie's laughing in the other room right now.
Did he die?
Reggie? No, Reggie's right there.
Regis.
Oh yeah, Regis. Yeah, no, Regis.
Did he die? Regis died.
Regis died. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Regis died. Yeah, yeah. No, Regis. Notre Dame alum, Regis Philbin.
That's right.
R.I.P.
Yeah. And his
man.
Daughter, who dated Farragher.
Who dated? Yeah, that's right. JJ
for
yeah.
like 3 years in college. Yeah,
yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. CJ, this is what they say about CJ Stroud in The Athletic. CJ Stroud's season now officially qualifies as a sophomore slump. Ooh, there's a topic.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I'm glad they said that. I was wondering if this was the sophomore slump week, and
yeah.
it was.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's been tiptoeing around it, trying to,
not
like,
the Athletic.
I don't know. Is it a sophomore
that's
slump?
Why they're number one. he had a 60.
That's why they're the old Dame of sports.
he had a 64.2 passer rating and threw two interceptions Sunday night. And lost despite a 5-interception game from Jared Goff. Stroud is 24th in EPA per dropback. That's expected points added. It's in advanced analytics. As a rookie, he finished 6th. So there's your context. Who cares what it means? He was 6th as a rookie, and he's 24th now in a stat that, you know, 6th is really, really good.
Did you roll into it? Yeah.
Houston's lost 2 in a row and 3 out of its last 4.
Yeah, so EPA is the standard going currency for the stat nerd type.
It is.
You
yeah.
walk into a party with a whole bunch of EPAs, and those nerds are
they
throwing themselves at you.
Oh,
right now,
it.
CJ doesn't have that sweet, sweet stank of a high EPA.
He does not. QB confidence rating of 7, though. So that's about where I am with CJ. I think a lot of CJ's issues are CJ's got his own issues. Those two picks were bad. Those were on him.
Yeah.
But I think the pass protection the last month or so has done some damage, man.
And I don't – look, I'll make excuses for the Nico Collins absence. If I say hypothetically, if you take Tyreek Hill away from a young Pat Mahomes, it's a whole different scenario.
Yeah.
You know, and CJ – my confidence meter for CJ long term is a 10.
Yes.
I think I'm going to be glad that he's kind of going through what he is right now, because this is where you really learn how to be a quarterback when you have to deal with all this adversity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more bullish than your elitist pals.
I Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Hey, speaking of the win is a win mentality, we just got done talking about the point differential for the Texans, and oh man, they're winning all these close games. I think Joe Mixon spoke for the fan base in the locker room following the game on Sunday night. We'll hear from Joe Mixon coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
The approach each week is to go win the game, no matter how it looks. You know, we don't set out to win an ugly game, but in this league, every game comes down to, you call that, final possession. So you have to find a way to gut those out and win. We haven't been on the winning side, you know, of those games, as, you know, Green Bay, New York, and now Detroit. So we didn't make the plays to win the game. Like, however you win, you got to find a way. And to play, to win games, you got to have guys have to step up and make plays, and that's not happening.
Playing not to lose has been a criticism. I think kind of a mild criticism of this team, just based on how many close games they play and how many games that the Texans play in that don't need to be close, but they kind of make them close, either because they go into lulls or they make mistakes, whatever the case may be. You know, this game was a perfect example of it, obviously, on the scoreboard against the Lions. You gave up. The Lions scored all the points in the second half of this game. They were down by 16 at the half. They win 26-23. The very first play of the second half is an interception by your quarterback. You know, it's like I was just hoping against hope, Seth. I'm like, man, national TV, they just played. I think the Texans played their – I'd have to go back and look. That had to be their best half of football that they'd played all season in the first half of that. I mean, you're leading the best team in football – 23-7 at the half, and you had multiple turnovers that you forced. You had a great drive at the end of the half where, you know, CJ, they kind of unleashed CJ a little bit and let him kind of cut it loose, and he drove him mm-hmm. down the field and threw a touchdown pass to John Mechie. And I felt like at halftime, like, okay, maybe this is the week. Maybe this, against all of all teams to do it against, but maybe this is it. The irony of doing it against the Lions, and we're going to walk out of here and the Texans are going to win, you know, 37 to 16 or something like that. Didn't play out that way, unfortunately.
No.
And a lot of that had to do with conservatism in the second half and some other things.
Yeah, the conservatism, I mean, look, they had a deep shot to Tank Dell just right there for the taking. Was that conservative play calling there that did that in? No, it wasn't. I think when people speak in broad strokes about either being too conservative or playing not to lose or what have you, it's hard because I think people have different definitions for what that means. I don't think the appropriate strategy is to go out and just spread it out and pass 90% of the time, you know, in the second half when you have a lead. I don't think it's being conservative to want to have a balanced offense at any point in the game. I think the question becomes, all right, at what point when it's not working, do you just go ahead and abandon and just, yeah, we'll go into hurry-up mode and see what we have. And it's dicey when you have as big a lead as the Texans did and as otherwise healthy a lead as the Texans did. So I'm not as inclined to blame it on conservatism. I'll blame it on just a lack of execution, which all goes back to Bobby Slowick. And really, like, I understand the devotion to the run game because it's part of having a well-balanced offense where the pass game is set up by the run game and vice versa, that the run game is assisted by the passing game. It's just that right now it feels like they're trying to paint a masterpiece and they lack basic art training.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to go paint the Mona Lisa when you're still on a paint by numbers
with finger paints
level of skill. Yeah. Right. I think when the buzzwords like execution or play calling get factored into it, you start to maybe shift blame away from people without realizing, no, the offensive coordinator is the execution.
Yeah.
The fact that guys can't execute, that all comes back to the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. They should be able to execute whatever you're asking them to do.
Yeah.
That end around that got blown up in the second half, it actually could have worked out if one guy had gotten blocked. And yet, looking at the play design, it looked like guys were just either... It was weird. They was like, they seemed flummoxed and surprised that an outside linebacker was trying to blitz the quarterback and get deep into the backfield. They looked completely unready for
it. What is this?
Yeah, like, what the... Yeah, so, like, okay, who's to blame and who's at fault there? Ultimately, if you're trying to do too many exotic things, then yeah, there's going to be mistakes like that. But also, if you're going to run that stuff, are guys being coached up properly on how to block the look that they're seeing? And none of it looks right consistently enough.
Joe Mixon, this is a bit of a long cut, but it's worth listening to. This was Joe Mixon following the game on Sunday, and he said what a lot of the fans have been saying about the Texans and playing not to lose.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's a playoff atmosphere that we just, you know, went through. When it comes down to it, I've been on both sides of the spectrum. I've been on the winning side. I've also been on the losing side. Today was just unfortunate. I was on the losing side. But when it comes down to it, that's what we're going to get. That's what we're going to see. And we got to put our best foot forward, you know, going forward. And I honestly feel like we got all the guys in this locker room to be able to be what we want at the end of the year, which I highly feel like we will. You know, it's that point in the middle of the season where, you know, things happen and, you know, it's no excuse. You know, that's a game that we should have had. We did have, you know, obviously a slip. But, you know, it ain't going to get no easier. And I'm going to take it, I'm going to take it all upon myself to make sure our guys, you know, is ready. You know what I'm saying? That we finish these games. We got to stop playing to, you know, to lose. We got to stop playing to not lose. You know what I'm saying? And go play to win. You know what I'm saying? So I just feel like, we got to just take initiative, own it, own our work, and look each other in the mirror. It is what it is.
It's funny because after the Jets game, we lit up Titus Howard for saying we should have won that game. You know, that was the better team loss. You know, however Titus put it. Remember that when Titus is like, we let that one slip away,
yeah,
that game? CJ and Joe Mixon both said that after the game, and they're, you know, I haven't felt the need to criticize either. That did
well,
feel the, like a
because
game.
They did let it slip
they did
away.
Let that,
that was a genuine
a,
lead.
That was
the
a
Jets
slip
game,
away.
It wasn't the Jets game, you had a one touchdown lead in the first half. That wasn't you there was nothing about it didn't feel like you let one slip away.
Yep.
Against the Lions, you had a healthy lead. And self-inflicted wounds in the third quarter really did you in.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's more fair and accurate to say that. Both Joe Mixon and C.J. Stroud have pointed the finger at themselves, but also pointed the finger at their teammates and basically supported the coaches in saying, guys just simply have to go out and play better and play up to expectations. It's hard on the offensive line because I don't know if the interior guys are capable of living up to any kind of respectable expectation.
Yeah.
What is the expectation for those guys? We'll see with the newly vamped ones now with another week to practice and all of that. I got one guy that I was complaining about how ineffective they've been with the run game at times, and somebody said the run only thing has been working. Last game it struggled, but that's been our only consistent offense. Stop being lazy and speak to who needs to step up. His lack of preparation is killing us. That's why Bobby has to spoon-feed him the plays respectfully.
Talking about CJ?
So he's talking about CJ. He didn't define his pronouns, and when he said you, I don't know if he's talking about me or Bobby Slowick or what have you. But other than that, other than being a poor writer, I think he's saying that it's all on CJ and that he has to be spoon-fed by Bobby. Look, I don't think that that's a fair way to phrase it. I think that the problem, he's getting pressured on over 50% of his dropbacks.
Yeah, that's it, man.
If you want him to go up and have full command of the entire playbook at the line of scrimmage the way Peyton Manning does, that's stupid. That Peyton Manning wasn't that way in his second year. Pat Mahomes wasn't that way in his second year. That's something that takes a lot of time over time to really digest. And, yeah, CJ made bad plays in that game. CJ will be a better quarterback next year than he is right now, and he'll be a better quarterback in the fourth year than he was in the third year. There's things that are making it really hard for a second year quarterback to operate right now.
Yeah, dude, I'll net it out here with some numbers for you. CJ Stroud is playing behind an offensive line that over the last month is allowing pressure on more than half the dropbacks, and he is running more plays on third down and 10 plus this season by far than any other quarterback in football. Like, that's a bad combination. You can run a lot of plays on third and 10 plus, and you know, because your team's not a good running team, but maybe they're good in pass pro, and you can operate that way. CJ's operating where they're in third and 10 or more than any other team in the league, so now he's got to drop back and throw and try to get 10 or more yards on third down to keep drives alive, and he's got 2 seconds to figure out what to do because the offensive line can't protect him. CJ's run 50 plays on third and 10 or more this season. The next closest are Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers at 37. Like, CJ's got a third more, like 33% more times he's been playing in third and 10 because they can't run the ball on first and second down.
They can't
run
the ball,
stupid penalties, too.
Yeah, they're also bad at, I mean, so you look at some of the effectiveness of their passing on the early downs isn't good either.
Yeah.
But how many of those passes are also just the screens alone, my God, how bad they are at screens. It's just right. The offense is not operating in such a way right now that you can put sole blame on anybody, realistically. And it's a hodgepodge of issues and errors and blocking breakdowns. Yes, quarterback decisions at times. The run game, I do feel there's this belief that because Joe Mixon gets 100-plus rushing yards that somehow the run game is just fine. My ass. No, they have not been able to run when they really need to run the ball. There's been no part of this rushing offense. Even as Joe Mixon has been able to amass yardage, it's not like you can sit and go, oh, when you have a lead, can you actually run the ball? No, they have not been able to. They've been getting destroyed, and a lot of that comes back to the... I'm sorry if CJ is not doing a good enough job blocking when they need to run the ball. I'm sorry. I guess I should have been. I was being lazy and not blaming CJ for the complete nonsense. I'm sorry that I'm not blaming CJ for letting Tytus Howard strip the ball from him. Yeah, CJ should have had better ball security there when one of his own offensive linemen stripped the ball away from him. How lazy of me to not blame CJ for Tytus Howard stripping the ball from his own quarterback.
I need to hear, we can't do it here because we're up against, but I need to hear just one more time Andre's call of that in the final segment of the show, just because it won't be relevant moving forward. But yeah. Yeah, CJ needs to finish his blocks. That's what he needs to do.
Lazy. CJ's got to, yeah, he's got to do a better job on goal line of really rooting those defensive tackles
yes,
out of there.
Yes, yes.
He's got to do a better job of that.
All right, Jerry Jones has weighed in on the Micah Parsons, Mike McCarthy situation. Let's reset this. And is this bad news for Mike McCarthy? We will talk about that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. I'm looking at the PFF grades for the Texans for the past week. I don't know, like Tytus Howard's PFF grade for this game was a robust 71.5. I feel like, well, let's play this again. This was the sack, the fourth sack of the game for the Lions. That this was the one where Tytus, I guess, was trying to take the ball from CJ so he could go make a play. And it turned out looking like a strip sack. Here's what it sounds like.
Stroud gets the snap. CJ with pressure. CJ scrambling out to the left, now back to the right, runs into Tytus Howard. Ball comes out. Somebody's got to fall on it. Texans have it inside their 35-yard line. A disaster on third down.
Tytus has got to stop watching and quitting on plays, watching the action when he gets himself beaten. That's what happens when you just stop and start watching and somebody's still playing. You're trying to get out of the way. You run right back into him.
It looked like Tytus almost pulled the ball out trying to pull
it
CJ
happened,
with
Mark,
him.
It happens way too much.
Okay, yeah. So Dre's there
not
talking.
Not the pulling the ball part right. out. That did happen way too much in that one occurrence in the history of football
yes,
that it happened. Yes, that's too much.
It's
yes.
too much, yeah. I almost feel like, Seth, if you have a play like Tytus had there, like that is literally one of the worst plays I've watched a Texan execute ever because he feels like he's finished his job, so he just stops in the middle of it. And then that guy is the one who gets CJ. CJ runs into Tytus, who's just standing there like a statue. And then Tytus thinks the best solution is to rip the ball out of CJ's hands and I guess turn up field and try to start making guys miss. You know, like try to go get a chunk play.
But then he had that idea in his head. But at some point, you'd think it would be clear to him that the quarterback isn't trying to give you the ball.
He ripped it out,
like,
dude.
At what point did you double down on it? Like, I'm taking this. It's time somebody step up and right this ship.
The best would have been if he Peanut Tillman punched the ball out of CJ's hands. Scooped it up. Oh, so Tytus had a 71.5. as a PFF grade, which for those not familiar with PFF, that's a decent grade. It's not like elite, but it's pretty good. Yeah. I almost feel like you should be automatically subtract like 30 points from your grade if you have a play like Tytus had right there. If you try to take the ball out of your quarterback's hands and it ends up looking like a strip sack fumble, like minus 30 right there. Sorry.
Everybody, you know, look, I had a good year. I was it was like a normal person. You're like, I hit all my incentives and everything. Yep. I got a Christmas bonus and everything. But everybody wants to focus on, oh, I shot and killed my wife. Oh,
right.
Oh, I have that. That's what everybody wants to talk about. Shooting and killing your wife was kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal.
In that game, I don't care what Tytus Howard did on a down-by-down basis. Actively strip-sacked his own quarterback,
yes.
To his credit, he did recover the fumble.
He did, no.
So,
if he was wearing a Lions uniform, it would have been one of the plays of the weekend right there.
It would have been pretty impressive.
Yeah. Strip it and recover it.
It was who was a better defensive lineman in that game, Aleem McNeil or Tytus Howard?
Tytus
was by far the
best.
Well,
Aleem was really good. He was really good, but Tytus was right there with him, man. I mean, he forced more strip sack fumbles than McNeil did. So I just wanted to play that one more time. Micah Parsons is a huge story, and I'm glad that it's a big story now because it's actually relevant. You know, the Texans play the Cowboys coming up here, so it's kind of fun that the biggest story in football, Micah Parsons, his comments about Mike McCarthy, you know, he claims he didn't throw Mike McCarthy under the bus. At least one of the comments, you know, one portion of his comments would indicate something negative about Mike McCarthy. Jerry Jones has spoken about this on our sister station up in Dallas, Seth. I don't have the audio to it, but I've got the quotes. But let's reset here. Here is Micah Parsons after the game on Sunday, a 34-6 Cowboy loss to the Eagles at home. This is Micah Parsons when he was asked about Mike McCarthy's future with the team.
You know, that's above my pay grade about if Mike is coaching again next year. But, you know, all coaching aside, coaching, you know, Mike can leave and go wherever he wants. But the guys, I kind of feel bad for is guys like Zach Martin and guys who might be on their last year or on their way out, you know, because that's who I wanted to hold the trophy for. You know, you want to win games and do great things with those type of legends who put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did. So those are the kind of guys that I have so much sympathy and hurt for.
That last part, you can't construe that as anything about anything other than being negative about Mike McCarthy, just because the way you say, like, more than so-and-so ever did. You know what
ever
I mean?
Ever did, right. The time part, too. The time part is the part that's just complete garbage. Right. The coaches that I thought were the worst coaches that I ever played for in the NFL, they all put more time in than any of the players.
They all worked
That's
yeah.
just the nature of the business, yeah.
Yep.
So that is the part where, at the very least, you'd think, okay, maybe he'll walk it back a little bit and say, like, well, okay, I feel like it was taken out of context, but yeah, I shouldn't have said. To clarify, what I mean is, you know, the actual blood, sweat, like the actual physical toil and labor of it. Maybe in the cleanup, did Micah Parsons do that?
Let's play Micah walking it back, and then I've got Jerry's comments here. So here's Micah on his podcast, walking it back.
We all have to see through the BS of what these TV analysts are trying to do and, you know, provide us and basically take words. I never once threw or even intended to throw Mike McCarthy under the bus. Like I said, he's one of the most winningest coach. He is a Super Bowl champ. I never once brung up his past. And the question that was asked was about here in the Dallas Cowboys, did I see Mike McCarthy in our future? And I said, that's above my pay grade. So never once did I ever intended or wanted to reflect on Mike McCarthy's career, because I always knew it was a good one. I've always had a great relationship with Mike McCarthy, and I never even put that in question.
Okay, so
yeah,
that
you
was,
did. You did. You did.
Totally did.
Yeah, but you did. Like, this, he's blaming the people for taking the words that he said at face value. And like, it's like, no, there's no him walking it back there. He's blaming the people, and he, like, it's easy to blame big media when, no, it's podcasts as well. It's bloggers. It's everybody that heard what you said and said, all right, listen, dude, don't be throwing your coat. The coaches try real hard not to throw you under the bus. In media sessions and what have you.
That's
and
true.
You totally threw him under the bus there.
Yep. So here's what Jerry Jones had to say, and we don't have the audio. This just came down in the last several minutes here, but Jerry Jones has weighed in on this. Again, this is the team the Texans play this weekend, so this is what they've got going on right now. Texans are trying to fix their second half offense. The Cowboys are trying to fix their entire team personality. Jerry Jones said this on 105.3 The Fan. I know those kinds of things happen. I know that his deference, and I'm serious about this, this is a fact. It was not meant, no matter how it sounded, it was not meant as a critique of the coaches or the head coach. It was meant as a concern for the veteran players such as Zach Martin and, I hate our website here, such as Zach Martin that might not have that much more in their career left. And he meant as a concern to them because they don't have the length of time to right the ship as much as a player like Micah or the younger players. That's how it was meant. There's no doubt in my mind. This is Jerry Jones. There's no doubt in my mind it was meant that way.
Right.
End quote.
And honestly, I feel like, maybe Micah doesn't have a long history of saying very bright things. Yeah, he says a lot of dumb things. And I think the way he phrased it, it was dumb. And it's as simple as that. I did this once, Sean, after a game. We had lost a game where we had a healthy lead. We let it slip away.
Mm-hmm.
And we were out there in prevent defense. And we ended up squandering a lead in the second half. And after the game, I said, somebody asked me a question, like, hey, do you worry about being out there in a prevent defense at that point? We had a three-man rush, you know, all the things people hate. And I said something to the tune of, it shouldn't matter if we have seven defensive backs back there. You can't you can't let up a big play like that. The way it was printed and kind of out of context without the question being in there was like, wow, we had seven defensive backs back there and they still got beat. And so it looked bad. So yeah. I got up in front of the team and I said, hey guys, this is how I intended it. I'm sorry that it came out that way. And it's not, but it was my direct quote, and I could see how people, I would have phrased it differently if I had thought about it beforehand.
Dude.
So Micah should have phrased it differently than he did. It's as simple as that. Like, listen, that wasn't my intent. I get it. I understand. I phrased it the wrong way.
How did you feel when you saw the quote framed that way in the media? Your quote.
I was like, I got to get into the team meeting ASAP.
Yeah
I got to tell these guys. I felt bad. I remember, well, I was with the Jaguars at the time. I saw Aaron Beasley like right after I'd read the paper. I was like, Aaron, no, listen, that's not what I meant, man.
Dude.
He was like, yeah, man, I was wondering about that.
That was in the 90s, too. You couldn't just jump on a group text with all of them. And
There was no texting. God, no.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, you had to wait for the meeting.
I never got my first text message until I was in Houston, and I didn't know what it was.
hey, there's words on my phone.
I was like, my sister, I was like, well, yeah, I was freaked out, kind of. I didn't know what a text message was.
It's wild.
And I was receiving it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Reggie Atatula, John Lopez, they're in the house.
We are in the house.
First time I get to see you guys this week. What's going on?
I don't know. Trying to get a feel for what's happening with these Texans.
Yeah.
Bobby Slowick, so on and so forth.
Yeah, we were just talking about all the drama going on right now with the opponent this weekend.
Yeah, it's nice for it to finally be useful to us.
Are you in touch with a lot of your people up there about this game? How are they feeling about this game?
I actually haven't talked too much to many of the folks, and it feels like they're just kind of in an apathetic state. Like, they've been dealing with this Cowboys team for a very long time. It's funny you use the word drama, because it's not any different than it usually is, right?
This is a
zoo up there.
Yeah.
And so it's a zoo, but now there's not the products on the other side that make it more more palatable.
Right.
And so they're all just like, oh, what do you expect? And of course, this was foreseen, the eventual breakdown of what's happened here, because the process wasn't good up there, even though they ended up with 12 wins 3 years in a row. So they're not excited for this.
And it shouldn't be this way.
Yeah.
I still can't believe they lost that game.
I was
driving in today, and I'm like, I still can't believe they lost that damn game.
Yeah, the play from that game that's going to stick with me for a while is the second interception.
The tank
wide open. Like, that's the one, and I'm guessing that's the one that's sticking with CJ.
A more confident CJ, a 2023 CJ, darts that ball as soon as he pops
it. He throws
open.
It quicker for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and you're right, and puts the appropriate amount of juice on it.
Yeah, and he walks into the end zone.
Because you could see as soon as he released it, like, oh, that's... That DB's got a shot to get there for that.
Backside cornerback, mind you.
Yeah, it was right. He wasn't even a safety.
Yeah, the part of that got me was just, it felt like you could see CJ seeing like the pass open up, and then there was like an extra beat.
Yes.
And a half.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's like, hey man, set your feet and let it rip. And you can see the wheels turning. And I hate that, because it felt like he played more free prior.
Yes.
And now you're seeing, you know, the weight of it all slow him down, and I really hate that for a dude who was so talented.
Yeah, no
doubt.
And
I do wonder too whether over these last few weeks if he's been struggling with injury of some sort, because the other part of it is that he's been less accurate. You know, he's had more either easy or low difficulty throws be errant than we're accustomed to seeing out of him. And now that could be is he just frazzled and he's not in rhythm, and that's why that's happening, or because he doesn't have as good a relationship with those other receivers as he does with Nico Collins or Tank Dell. I don't know, but it definitely looks like it's either an accumulation of all of the trauma from getting rushed as well as he has, or maybe he's dealing with something.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll see. We'll Monday Night Football, man. We'll find out.
No, that's the play. You're 100% right. That's the one where I said, CJ from even just last year darts it.
Yes.
As soon as he pops open, he anticipates it. He throws it on a line. He gets it to him. And it's
to his buddy Tank.
And it's a walk-in touchdown.
He's got ESP communication with. Yeah. So digging into the Texans today, digging into Bobby. So you guys saw Shane Waldron got fired.
Yes.
I'm guessing Texan fans are feeling a certain kind of way about that.
Oh, yeah.
That comparison was very fresh in my mind once I saw the Shane Waldron.
Dude, there's so many boxes those two, like the three wide receiver, you know, they're getting the stack in the wide receiver group in the offseason, and defensive head coaches. There's a lot of comps there between those two. All right, Reggie Atitula, John Lopez, and Figgy Fig. They're in the loop. Seth, I will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Oh, yeah. Right. Empty bodies and tacos on Taco Tuesday.
Oh, that sounds
trademark
good.
Trademark pending. LeBron.
I'm starving. LeBron's going to come after your ass, dude. You're screwed. LeBron
he didn't get that one.
LeBron and his team of lawyers. All right, we're done. We're out of time.